Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Gilcrease Museum's latest exhibit examines how immigrants have shaped the American story, influenced American art, and whose art today are still telling important stories about who we are and informing and commenting on our ideals. Americans All features artwork from the Gilcrease Permanent Collection, over 50 artworks that survey 200 years of American art by 26 immigrant artists. Artists such as Thomas Moran, Albert Bierstadt, Emmanuel Leutze, Leon Gaspard, and Augustus St. Gaudens, to name a few. Their classic images of America tell a mostly familiar story of America, although there are a few surprises, which are heightened by the juxtaposition of a selection of contemporary artworks by first-generation immigrants from the Tulsa area, including Jose Antonio Pantoja Hernandez, Mazen Abufadil, and Jave Yoshimoto. All present works that speak to contemporary migration, belonging, and assimilation. The contemporary artists will be rotating over the course of the exhibit's life. I'm joined by Gilcrease's curator of history, Mark Dolph, who assembled the art for the show. Americans Week continues on display at Gilcrease Museum. Mark Dolph, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Rich, for having us. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, Americans All, the new exhibit, seems to have several ideas behind it, but I think first and foremost, it's designed to foster discussions on what it means to be American today and also through the eyes of the artists of the past, which makes the bulk of the Gilcrease collection up. What were the conversations you wanted to foster with this exhibit?
We had several objectives when we were putting this together. First was to get more of the permanent collection on display. We have many popular shows. We were talking earlier about the TC Cannon that our audiences really like, really appreciate. But time and time again, I hear, I want to see more of the permanent collection. With over 14,000 pieces of fine art in the collection and the fact that at any given time we can only have maybe 3 to 5% of it on display, that's always a big consideration. So how can we present the permanent collection through a different kind of lens to get people to think of those works in maybe a different way than they have presented in the past? And about this time last year, our executive director, Susan Neal, came into a meeting that I was a part of, and we were trying to decide on a theme for the current Gilcrease Journal, the publication that the museum puts out twice a year. And we were talking about several different ideas, and she asked this very, turned out to be open-ended question, what about immigration? And the first thing that came to my mind was, well, Susan, we have an awful lot of immigrant artists, first-generation immigrant artists represented in our collection, and they are some of the finest, most noteworthy artists that Gilcrease Museum owns.
Really, the titans of the 19th century were immigrant artists.
That's
artists,
right. And
American artists.
Just based on our history as a nation, how we were growing, so many of them were immigrants. So what I've learned since that journal began to take shape, as I would mention this idea, and some of the artists that were represented in both the journal as well as the collection at large, oh, I didn't know Thomas Moran was an immigrant. I didn't know John James Audubon was an immigrant. And we take for granted, I think, that these were native-born Americans. But in the case of Thomas Moran, he came to the United States as a young child with no artistic background. He came from a family of weavers. And as that industry in England was being dramatically changed by the Industrial Revolution and the machines that were now weaving what people once did, his family immigrated looking for opportunity. That's a story as old as America as itself. And it's still why many people come to this country. Or John James Audubon, who came as a young man, about 18 years old, born in Haiti, grew up in France, and left France in part to escape being conscripted into the Napoleonic Wars. So the stories behind the artist are, for me, who's more steeped in history than art, I view the art in the collection as a way to tell the history that is inherent in those works. The stories of these artists are as fascinating as the works they created.
I love the way you sort of use two pieces of graphic design to bookend the show. And one is the title piece of the show, Americans All, by Howard Chandler Christie. This is a pretty famous piece of graphic art that he made it, I guess, right around World War I. It was, again, this propaganda piece of we are all Americans. And in his version, there are all these ethnic names of, you know, people who are all contributing. And then the Second World War comes around, and yet another graphic artist comes up with Americanos Tudo, Leon Helguera, who uses that same theme that Christie had used in World War One, in World War Two, and it's simply, I believe it's a cowboy hat and a sombrero with hands extended, a brown hand and a white hand. Again, very powerful statement of how immigrants have contributed and are expected to contribute. And again, it gets into some of the themes of this show of sometimes immigrants are absolutely critical to us, and other times it becomes a symbol of the other and fear and frightened sort of nature. I assume that was a very purposeful use of these two pieces of graphic art.
You are correct, Rich. The Howard Chandler Christie World War I poster is from 1919. The war has ended, but we still have debts to pay. We need to pay for the war. Mm-hmm. And we have a typical, in the poster, typical Christie girl, this beautiful young woman.
Idolized Lady Liberty, if you will.
Yes, uh-huh. So evocative of the Statue of Liberty. And those ethnic names you see, it's a very targeted message to the immigrant community. What did you see as you came to this country? The Statue of Liberty, these names here representing Greece and Turkey, Czechoslovakia, from Mexico, from Sweden, have all given, in their cases, the ultimate sacrifice. You, amongst us, help solidify their sacrifice by helping pay for the war. The second poster by Helguera, Americanos Todos, is very similar in theme, at least to my eyes. It underscores, and I use the word capricious in the object label, relationship that Americans have with immigration. At times, World War I, World War II, we have an open embrace because we need the immigrant, whether it's in the munition factories in Los Angeles during World War II, to where those Native American-born Mexican women are relied upon to make the sinews of war that we need in Europe and in the Pacific. So there's an open embrace, so much so that they become known as Rosita the Riveter, not Rosie the Riveter. But then we have periods throughout our history where the immigrant is pushed away, that we don't want them, that we try to exclude them. So this capricious, I long considered the word schizophrenic. I thought that might be a little too provocative. But that is nothing new. The current debates over immigration go back to the very founding of the Republic, when Benjamin Franklin, one of the ultimate Americans, bemoaned the fact that there were too many Germans coming into the country and they would dilute the British culture.
Right. 1840s, when a lot of these artists that you see on the walls that were painting, there were huge debates over immigration. And every new wave of immigrants, whether they came from Ireland or Germany or Scandinavia or Southern Europe, Italy and Spain and Greece, every one of them, there's always provoked a backlash. And toward more recently in this century, it's been about from Latin America coming north. But let's talk a little bit about the art in the show, because one of the great joys is seeing things from the collection that aren't normally out. And one of the first things that caught my eye was the Thomas Moran of Columbus approaching San Salvador. This goes right to the very beginning of what would become an immigration story. It's the story of Columbus, quote, discovering, unquote, the New World. Again, I think it was a provocative selection to make us think about, okay, here's the way we were always taught. And yet here are other theories. As you go around the room, you see other theories of what that moment meant for American history.
Yes. Most people that are quite familiar with our collection had never seen that work, because it's not what they would expect from Thomas Moran. What you expect, and I think most people want to see, are those massive landscapes of the American West, the Grand Canyon, Yellowstone, those sorts of works.
Yeah, the Venice paintings as well. Yeah,
correct. So here's something that is very different for Moran. That's an early work for Moran in our collection. It was actually painted in 1860, and then he came back in 1890 and retouched it. I'd like to know exactly what he did. But it's, you mentioned the original immigrants. My Native American friends would say the first illegal immigrants. And that's the kind of conversation that I would like us to talk about in a civil, hopefully safe space. I would love that exhibition to become Tulsa's town hall for a conversation on immigration from all points of view.
Yeah. There's a couple of interesting juxtapositions in the show. First of all, I should mention that the show features pieces from the Gilcrease Permanent Collection on the walls. In one gallery, though, you have a selection of contemporary art by for the most part, Tulsa area artists or people with associations with Tulsa, contemporary artists who are first generation immigrants. But I want to mention a couple of pieces that, again, sort of put these two stories of how America developed. One is Emanuel Leutze. People will know this name, probably not know the name, but know his most famous iconic painting. He is defined how we remember Washington crossing the Delaware. He's the painter of that famous painting. But he also did a number of works. Again, an immigrant totally embracing the American story, and you have his Westward, the Course of Empire. This is a poster for a manifest destiny. Next to it, you have Jules Tavernier, a French immigrant, who has this painting called A Disputed Passage, in which a wagon train is heading west. You've seen the obstacles the Native Americans have put out to hold on to their land. So it's two very interesting juxtapositions between the two paintings. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yes, and you mentioned the Trevenier. When you walk into that space, that is what confronts you as you walk in. Obviously, the Leutze is right beside it. It's very noticeable. But they're having a conversation, and several of these works do have that back-and-forth conversation between them. But with Trevenier, his story, his narrative of manifest destiny is far more ambiguous than what Leutze's is. For Leutze, it's the obvious future, and that's how we would translate manifest destiny from the 19th century. The obvious future for the United States was to claim all the territory between the Atlantic and Pacific, become a transcontinental nation. Where Trevenier, this immigrant, who upon his arrival in the United States gained an assignment from Harper's Weekly to travel on the just completed Transcontinental Railroad, 1869, and travel across the country, and he's sending back these sketches that become images for the newspaper that are a revelation for many Americans. They're seeing the destruction of the bison herds, the outbreak of the Indian Wars after the Civil War, the environmental degradation that manifest destiny was bringing to the nation. And so for this outsider, this immigrant, seeing through very different eyes than somebody had lived in the country, still an immigrant, like Lloyd said, but had been in the country for a long period of time, is looking through with a kind of different perspective, different way of understanding what's happening. So this wonderful work, A Disputed Passage, you see the wagon trains in the background coming down this very forbidding, narrow canyon. And I think most viewers at first glance see that their passage is disputed by nature. There's a huge fallen tree blocking their way. But as we know from Western films, Oregon Trail migration stories, that won't stop the pioneers. They'll hack through the tree and make their way. But a closer inspection reveals it's not just nature, it's human agency of Native people that are ready to prevent that passage into their lands.
You know, we have to remember that our view of the West was made by artists oftentimes being commissioned to create that view of the West. Moran, Bierstadt, many of the great American artists of which are part of this show were out to portray an Eden, the promised land, if you will.
That is a wonderful observation, Rich, because it really depended on the intent and motivation of that patron on, in many cases, how they interpreted the subject. And for example, artists like Bierstadt, Moran, were often working as part of federal government exploration into the West. And one of the motivations of the American government was to encourage settlement, migration into the West, whether onto the Great Plains or the far mountain west. And to encourage that kind of migration, that settlement, you don't want a west that is dry, barren, and looks like a place you would never successfully settle. You use the term Eden. So it's a well-watered place. So many of these works, whether it's Bierstadt, Moran, William Keith, present the west as a west full of water, just the thing that the American farmer would need.
My guest today is Mark Dolfa, curator of history at Gilcrease Museum and curator for Americans All, currently on display now at the museum, looking at immigration in a variety of ways through the 19th century immigrant artists that are the backbone of the collection, as well as through the eyes of some contemporary artists as well. I have to mention there are two pieces by native-born Americans, Monroe Satoki, his portrait of Indian man, which is actually not what I'd normally associate with a Kiowa 6. It looks like this was an experiment in modernist painting, and it's kind of interesting looking at the influence of European here of wonderful, fine native artists. And Joseph Becker, it's a painting of the snowshed in the Sierra Nevada, and I assume the reason it was collected because this is probably one of the few instances in the Gilcrease collection where the Asian immigrant story is told.
Exactly. It is, I believe, the only example of an Asian being represented in art. So while I originally drew a circle around this idea to be in the show, the work had to have been created by an immigrant, first-generation immigrant to the United States. I did make two exceptions, three if we consider the Howard Chandler Christie poster, because he was born in the United States. But to Becker, he was born in Pennsylvania. So he falls outside that circle. I'm guilty of violating my own first rule. But the subject is so important. And I mentioned earlier that many of these works are having a conversation with each other. In front of that work by Becker of the Chinese, who were instrumental in building the railroad, by the time the Central Pacific joins the Union Pacific in 1869, it's estimated that 90% of the labor force on the Central Pacific was Chinese. But there's a conversation because who authorized the legislation, who initiated it? It was Abraham Lincoln. And there is the St. Augustus bust of Lincoln sitting out in front of this work. So in 1862, amidst fighting the Civil War, Lincoln's administration passes two extremely important acts of Congress that fall into this conversation of manifest destiny. There's the Pacific Railroad Act, which authorizes the construction of the Transcontinental Railroad, and there's the Homestead Act. So once you have the railroad, now you can bring lots of people out into the West, as well as take the products of the West out to Eastern and international markets. So they're having that conversation, but then there's another reason to have the Becker work of the Chinese in the show. We've talked about this schizophrenic relationship that Americans have always had with immigration. Who was the first group to be targeted for exclusion from immigration? It was the Chinese with the 1882 Chinese Exclusion Act.
Yes, they built the railroad, and then we wanted them to all
go
home.
No more of them.
Yeah.
So
let them all go home.
That's why that work was so important for me to have in the show. And then the Tsoke Monroe, Tsoke Kiowa 6, there's another conversation going on. The work just to the left of that work is by Oscar Jacobson, a Swedish immigrant to the United States. His family settled in Lindsborg, Kansas, a Swedish community up in central Kansas, where he studied under another Swedish immigrant,
Bergen
Zanzin. And eventually Oscar Jacobson will go down to the University of Oklahoma, really create their art department. And in the 1920s, he will be a mentor to what becomes known as the Kiowa Six. Monroe Tsoke was one of those. But that work, as you indicated, is very, very different from the flat style that that group is so well known for, that he obviously took other influences away from his time with Jacobson. That's a very early 20th century kind of European style, but it is in the opposite end of the exhibition. You can walk into it right now from either end, and he is staring you in the face as you walk into that exhibition gallery, almost reminding us that what Columbus stumbled into in 1492 was full of very sophisticated people and cultures, and that what becomes United States, back to this story of manifest destiny, the triumphs, but also the tragedies of both people, culture, environment that go with it.
We should mention the contemporary artists that are a part of this. This is some of them very local artists. Jose Antonio Pantoja Hernandez, really an amazing work. And you have them on opposite sides of the partition. Pantoja's Exodus, influenced by a current refugee story of Syrian refugees. And then just on the other side, Jave Yoshimoto's The Dew of Eos and Ephemeral Propinquity. And again, both of them telling contemporary stories of the refugee crisis in Syria. Beautiful wood sculpture in the case of Yoshimoto, painting in the course of Pantoja. Tell me a little about these pieces.
Well, as you've indicated, both were inspired by the Syrian Civil War and this out-migration of literally millions of Syrians as a result of being bombed by their own government, killed by their government if they're opposed.
As well as proxy governments as well.
And proxies, yeah. Right. That's a story that's still without an ending at this point. But in the bigger narrative of this Americans All exhibition, what is immigration but the movement of people? And now we're calling them migrants now, but they're going to end up someplace. In the case of Pantoja from Cuba, his inspiration was as a new American. He gained his American citizenship August 1st of this year. He had a daughter born in Tulsa 2 years ago. And when he was seeing these images in the news media of these bombings, and particularly of these young children like his own.
I have to think that like the bombing of Aleppo played a role in this work.
And particularly with poison gas. You know, if the bombings are horrible enough, then killing your own people as a government with poison gas takes it to another level. And that was his inspiration. With Jave Yoshimoto, he got to know a former Jesuit priest who had been in Greece during this period. And the priest told him this story of this mermaid of the ocean. Right. And that's what you see, this mermaid literally scooping up these migrants.
And it's almost a Madonna-like look of his scooping up immigrants. And everywhere, there's even Godzilla in the background. it's a really interesting piece and thought-provoking at the same time. But all these images of people coming out of the water, it's really is strong.
It's salvation. His work, Jay Yoshimoto's work, for me as a viewer, is much more hopeful than Pantoja's.
Yeah.
There's a high-level degree of despair in Exodus. But I mentioned earlier the stories behind these artists, whether they're in the permanent collection at Gilcrease or in this case, these two men who are contemporary working artists, Jose working as an artist, literally a street artist in Havana. His work is becoming more surreal, more political. And a museum director in Mexico just happens to be on the street, sees his work, goes through all the red tape necessary to get Jose a pass out of Cuba to exhibit his work in Mexico. Finally comes to pass, he gets on the airplane, flies to Mexico. As soon as he gets off the plane, he gets on a bus to Nuevo Laredo, walks across the border, asks for political asylum. It's granted, ends up in Tulsa, and as I indicated, August 1st became an American citizen.
Mm-hmm. Two other artists have work, Mazen Abu Fadil, some very interesting contemporary pieces, photo mosaics on rice paper. And I was struck by one image, it's like called Pariah or Potato, which is this image of this sweet potato with a strange growth on the end. And the title itself, looking at the immigrant experience, you know, are we who we are, or do we look at an object in a grotesque way?
And is it the, in Mazen's case, I think, coming here as a young child, growing up in Tulsa, he suffered a lot of discrimination, ridicule, seen as the outsider. And so I think he uses that work to show, how do we look at others? Is it as that pariah? It's the same object. We're both looking at the same image. But how do we view them? How do we accept or reject them based on that image? And for Mazen Abu Fadil, his work is really, it's four works, but you have to view it as an installation.
Yeah.
And I shared with you earlier, Rich, the story, again, I love the stories. That's what really connects us as humans. That when I first met Mazen, we were having coffee, but he shared the story with me that after finally settling in Tulsa, the very first museum he ever visited as a child was Gilcrease Museum. And a couple weeks ago when we were installing his works, we had just finished, he turns around and what does he see but the work of Thomas Moran just over his shoulder. He literally got goosebumps and was quite emotional that I can't believe I'm back here now with my works in your museum.
That's great. I have to mention one other piece, which is perhaps, I don't want to say it's a first, but it's the first time in a long time where we've actually seen a piece of installation art, and that's by Guadalupe Castorena, The Perfect Tommy Girl. A nice little video installation, sort of looking at that desire and yet the fear that goes along with that of assimilation, of trying to fit into society, of being branded a sellout by your own people, It's this interesting sort of installation art of a mirror that doubles as a video screen with a little table and accoutrements. And it goes to a very fast motion video of her transforming herself into a blonde white American through a series of bleaching devices and the like. And eating a bowl of cactus because of this phrase that apparently mm-hmm. is, you know, you're trying to, when you try to look too American, members of her community say, you have a cactus on your forehead. Very, very powerful piece.
It really is. I first became aware of Carmen through my family who lives over in Bentonville, Arkansas, where she was living at the time of her death. She had come into the United States as a child illegally with her family. She eventually gained DACA status, and with that DACA status was able to attend the University of the Ozarks in Clarksville, Arkansas, earned her degree, fine arts performance. And that piece that you mentioned, The Perfect Tommy Girl, was her senior project at University of the Ozarks. I saw it earlier this year when I mentioned this concept I was noodling around with, the art of immigrants and the contributions they've made to American art and culture, to a family member who said, well, you really need to see this video that Carmen has done. And the first time I saw it, I literally wept because of the power that it had. I understood it from Carmen's point of view as this outsider, very much like Mazin's work, as an outsider trying to fit in. And often, despite all attempts, you're still who you are physically that you project, that others see. But I also think it transcends what she was trying to do, that anybody that's ever felt like they didn't fit, that they're the square peg trying to fit into a round hole, is going to get it. So because you mentioned it's different, I don't think we've ever done anything like that.
Right.
I wanted to make sure that our executive director, Susan Neal, was comfortable with it. So I showed it to Susan. I'd like to have this in the show, but I want to make sure you're okay because this is a real leap for us. And she watched it and said, this is every girl I knew in high school. They weren't Mexican. They weren't trying to become American. They were trying to fit somebody else's ideal of what they should be. So my only suggestion when you come out, and I encourage all Tulsans at your museum to come out and see this work in Americans All, is this one you need to read the contextual information, both what I provided, but also in Carmen's own words about this work, then initiate the experience there on the screen.
All right. Mark Dolph, thanks very much for joining us.
Great. Loved it. Thanks, Rich.
Mark Dolph is a curator of history at Gilcrease Museum of Art and is the curator for Americans All, now on display at the museum. Gilcrease is open Tuesday through Sundays from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. For more information, visit gilcrease.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own, do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.